All right. Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everyone to the March 2006 meeting of the Triangle Linux Users Group. Since the pizza's already arrived, we're going to start with that first thing. Can I please have a show of hands for everyone who's here for the first time? Very first time. All right. With your hands up, please rise. You guys are first in line for the pizza. Run like the wind. All righty, now that everybody is fed and watered, we have a few announcements to make. First of all, we were supposed to have an election for a missing steering position post this month. Because we only had one nominee, we decided that an election was unnecessary. Let me just introduce our current steering committee for you. I'm Jason Tower, the chairman. We have John Broom, treasurer. Kevin Audie is the new system administrator. Joseph Tate in the back, who you should remember from last month. And our newest member, Cristobal Palmer, who will be assuming the position of vice chair. So I want to thank all the other guys for all their time. Welcome, Chris, aboard. The hazing will commence at the bar. All right. Two announcements from a couple of our Red Hat hosts. Claire Sauls and Deborah, if you'd like to come up, we'll give you guys a chance to make your announcement. Oh, and also, if you have a cell phone or a pager, if you would please make sure it's in off or silent position. Thanks.
Hi, everyone. Like you said, I'm Claire Sauls, and I am planning a summer computer camp that's going to be sponsored by Red Hat this summer called Red Hat High, and it's going to be for middle school students, and it's just going to kind of introduce them to computer technology and show them some cool ways that technology is used. And there are going to be five tracks, and two of the tracks we would love some help on. So I am just kind of making a call to see if anyone would be interested in helping out. There's a video game track that we want to try and put together just to show kids kind of the how to build video games, that sort of thing, all on open source software and Linux. And there's also a video editing track where they're going to look at both video that's out there on the web that they can use and also maybe putting a little bit of their own video on there with it. So if anyone is interested in helping out, you can send an email to redhathigh@redhat.com, and that will go to me so I can answer any of that. And if anyone's interested in just volunteering in general to help out, the camp is going to be aimed at minorities and females to get them interested, and it's going to be free of cost to the kids, so it's a good cause, and it's going to be a fun camp, and it's this July. So just email me if you have any questions at redhathigh@redhat.com. Thank you. It's July 9th through 15th.
Hi, I'm Deborah Westmoreland. I'm the new editor for Red Hat Magazine, and I just wanted to come and see if I could petition any writers for the magazine. We pay $500 for an article, 1,500 to 2,500 words. And I can't write one for that much, but I would supplement my entertainment expense account if I could. So if you're interested in writing for Red Hat Magazine, we're looking for technical articles as well as cultural articles about open source or anything you think would be interesting to that community. Please give me an email or a call. My email is dwestmore, 8 characters, of course, no E at the end of that, at redhat.com. Does anyone have any questions? dwestmore. No E, just dwestmor at redhat.com. 8 characters, Unix friendly. That's how you remember. Thanks.
All right. A couple of other brief announcements. Trilog has recently switched its P.O. box, so we will have a new mailing address. Not that I think anyone's sending us lots of Christmas cards or anything, but please know that, and it will be published through the website. So there is a new mailing address. Speaking of the website, some of you may have noticed, we have a little bit of a new look at trilog.org. We have recently implemented a website based on Drupal CMS, content management system. It is still in the very early stages. There's a great deal of work yet to be done, but we have kind of moved away from our old code base, which apparently was not the easiest to work with, a little bit hard to manage and maintain. So if anybody knows much about Drupal and would like to volunteer to give a hand, please email steering@trilog.org. We'll welcome your input. and look for new features coming up. If you do go there, you'll notice there's like a place to log on with a username and password. That is not functional yet, so don't even bother to try. We'll make an announcement when that functionality has been implemented. Membership forms. If you'd like to sign up to be a Trilog member, please come up to the front. We have forms up here. If you signed up in the past and have not received your card, also come up at the end of the meeting, and we'll get you hooked up with that. All right. Have a job, need a job. Who here is looking for work, looking for a job? Okay, I've got a couple of hands in back.
My name is Sanjeev Rathore, and I did Java programming. I'm a certified Java programmer. I got in 2001. And I've done network hardware troubleshooting, and I can do hardware troubleshooting as well. But I'm looking for, like, programming. I've done a little bit of PHP and mainly a programmer. I graduated from NC State.
I saw one other hand. A couple others.
Hello, my name's Dave Brellinger. My background is Windows and Linux and Unix, and also NetApp. So I'm a very broad person across very many things, but what I am is primarily sysadmin.
And one more hand in the back.
My name is David Robinson, and I'm looking for a job in software verification.
Doug?
I'm Doug Green, and I'm looking for a job either in hardware or software verification. I have a lot of telecom, datacom experience, single-board computers, and embedded systems.
Okay, anybody else? All right, flip side, if anyone knows of a position that needs to be filled and would like to speak up, I figure I can always trust David for that.
My name is David. I work at Broadwick. We are currently looking for PHP developers. We're looking for a QA / scripting software verification engineer, and we are also looking for a Linux sysadmin for our set of about 35 servers. Anybody who's interested, either head to our website, broadwick.com, or come see me. I've got business cards and hook you up with the job description. Thanks.
Okay, anybody else? Going twice? Sold. All right, I think that covers us for announcements, so I'd like to turn the floor over to Marty Wesley from RPath, who is sponsoring our meeting tonight, so let's give a round of applause to RPath. Thanks very much. Marty, they're all yours.
Great. Thanks. I guess this is the reward for supplying the pizza. We get to spiel you for a bit to turn your stomach the other way, right? So. I didn't want to speak up during the early time because it would have taken away the 10 minutes I have of an unprepared speech. But RPath is actually a startup here in the area, venture-backed, and we actually are also looking for people, developers, specifically developers who are interested in working on the Canary technology that was demoed here a few weeks ago, mostly Python development, Linux experience, obviously very necessary. And experience with version control systems software version control systems would be a big plus. The second area we're looking for is a senior Linux distribution engineer, so someone who is very familiar with putting together an entire Linux distribution from the ground up. And if you have familiarity doing that with our tools, another big plus. So I'm here to tell you a little bit about RPath from, I know you got to see a demo of the RBuilder product. Now I'm here to tell you about a little bit more about what we do and our vision and what we're trying to do for Linux and the software industry. And we basically are trying to move the idea into the market of a software appliance. And what would be a software appliance? I know that there are probably people out there saying, I know what software is, I know what an appliance is, but I've never heard those two words put together. And what we are terming a software appliance is basically an opportunity for an application provider to bundle their application with just the minimal set of a Linux operating system needed to run that application, provide it to customers in a variety of formats. CD ISO images would be one of them, virtual machine images, VMware, Xen, et cetera, or even a hard disk image would be one of them. And what it does is it makes it very easy for the end customer to install and configure that application. So instead of having to go and get an operating system and install it and configure it and get the application, install it, configure it, and go through all the hassle of trying to figure all that out, you basically, through one installation, get a complete working stack application with all of the necessary components for it and a running operating system, so you can deploy it very quickly. And then the other piece of technology that that we're offering is the ability to update and manage that image over time, so that what it really allows the application provider to do is allow them to have an ongoing relationship with the customer, where they're not only providing the application one time, but they're providing the updates to it, the updates to the operating system underneath of it. So they really become a full service offering to their customers. So that's a little bit of the background and what we're trying to do at RPath. I encourage you all to check out RBuilder online. That is a hosted version of our product, RBuilder. And if you are interested in offering software appliances, if you work for a company that provides applications to customers and you want to look at a new way of providing an easy to deploy mechanism for customers, or if you're interested in being able to provide demo software to them in, say, a VMware image or a Xen image, I encourage you to also take a look at RBuilder and see if it might be a good place for you to start. The last thing, and then I'll turn things back over, is wanted to point out that VMware has actually announced a challenge. Build the best VMware appliance, and you could win up to $100,000. Not a bad payday for some work. And what I wanted to say is come and use our builder, and I think we can cut down the time that it would take for you to actually build a VMware image. Our tool online will actually generate VMware images directly that you could then turn around and submit to VMware, and if you're chosen in a matter of minutes using our tool, you could reap a pretty large reward. So I encourage all of you to take a look at that contest, and if you have good ideas for what would make an interesting and compelling virtual machine, try out our site, build a VMware image, and then see if you can win some money. So that's all. Thank you for your time. Thanks very much. One more announcement I forgot to make. This is a little bit of a monument. This is the first time that we are recording the entire presentation, audio, not video, just audio, is being sent over a phone line to an Asterisk server and being recorded as a WAV. We'll be converting that to an AUG and making it available. It is also possible, no one here needs it, but if this works out, it will be possible for people to listen in on the presentation if you cannot attend. So a little bit of a beta tonight. We'll see how it all works out. Kevin I is responsible for putting all that together, and we'll see how it goes. All right, so without further ado, let me turn it over to Paul and talk about AJAX, which I'm sure no one's ever heard of before. You know, we don't familiar with all these new fancy schmancy terms, so.
They're yours.
All right, so can everyone hear me? Okay. So just polling the crowd, how many people have actually heard Web 2.0 and of AJAX? All right, how many people think they know what it is? How many people care? All right. My name is Paul Enbehagen. I don't expect to have to say my last name. I am basically the chief geek, if you will, at EMU. I helped architect, design the system that we use to manage many different NIC systems. We are a AJAX, and I hate to use the term, Web 2.0 app. Heaven help me, I use a marketing term. Basically, what I was talking today, I was asked to come in as a pinch hitter because the original speaker couldn't make it, and talk about, you know, why we chose Web 2.0, what it really means, and what AJAX means to the industry and to Linux as a whole. Because I'm generally usually passionate about this and up on my soapbox preaching to people. So I said, why don't I just do it here at the Lug? Well, so let me get right into it. I decided to take it directly from Tim O'Reilly's website, and the sources, I think these are going to be posted in a PDF later, right? On the website or something?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you want to go read Tim O'Reilly's, it's really easy to do if you have Google. Basically, he defines Web 2.0, and what's interesting is that it came out of a brainstorming session between him and a company that specializes in bringing together conferences. So you can basically do the math there. They were figuring out a way to make new conferences. Right. So I guess the question comes down to, is it a useful term? I hate to admit it, but yes, it is. Ironically, when you start talking to people and they're describing what your application is and it's on the web, they look at you, like, why would you ever do anything on the web like that? And it depends on the audience you're talking to. If there's somebody who's got a technology background, they get it right away. Somebody who doesn't quite understand that a desktop app is not as ubiquitous as it needs to be, and it's actually part of the reason why there's such a stranglehold of Windows on the entire community of the world using computers. And one of the biggest things about Web 2.0 is that it's supposed to be the network is a platform for all connected devices. And he goes on to provide some bullet points of, you know, what does that mean? And some of them are, for example, and it's an attitude, right? It's technology. It's the data is the intel inside. And good examples of that are Google. All Google has to do is hiccup and everybody jumps for joy, right? It's a cult following, right? The hackability thing is very cool because think how many people out there have actually used the open interfaces of Google because it's all open and hacked it to do new things. Has anybody seen housingmaps.com? Right? If you haven't, really check it out. Half of you got laptops, you're probably doing it right now. Right? What it basically is they took Google and they took Craigslist and they mashed them together. All right? So now you can go to pull up this page and say, hey, I'm moving to Raleigh. I need to look for a place to live. Click on that little map, it pulls up Raleigh, say I'm looking for something for sale, and pulls up a Craigslist right next to it. And you can browse Craigslist and Google Maps at the same time. Wow, that's a pretty cool idea. It's an example of what they call mashup. The right to remix, and that's an example of that, some rights reserves. A good example is at Amazon. In fact, there's a lot of stuff out there that Amazon has open to developers. You can actually sign on as a developer for them, get a unique ID, and you can hack away and do whatever you want. There's actually a nice website out there. Kind of excuse me right now, but it's Amazon Lite. Basically, they remove all that extraneous stuff that's around it, all that heavyweight stuff, and they say, I want to find a book on Linux. And it just shows you that, and then once you decide what you want to buy, it takes you through their payment process. But it was one guy in his house at night that built it. All right? The rich user experience is the key thing about that. Housingmaps.com is a good example of that. Our application is a good example of that. It's about entrusting the users. And entrusting the users is another way of saying don't be evil. Right? Don't lock the user in. Don't think that you can predetermine everything the user is going to possibly do. Just leave it open. Trust them. Because when you get down to it, the market decides what they want. Right? And the market will go where they want, whether you like it or not. So that's an example of what Google does. Google does not try and predict what the market's going to do or force the market to do something. They think, where is technology going? And they try and be there before the market gets there. Right? Example why when Google hiccups, everyone jumps for joy. Right? So what are Web 2.0 examples? This may surprise you. IPTV is considered a Web 2.0 app. But remember, it's the web as a platform, not a web page. Right? Vonage is technically considered a Web 2.0 application. Right? BitTorrent, another one. iTunes, I put up here, it's kind of more of a 1.5, not really 2.0, but it's an example of a new way of getting music. It's an example of the market adapting to what it wants. Why did people use Napster? Because they didn't want to go to Best Buy and buy a $15 CD for one song, right? But they're willing to pay 99 cents for one song. And the RIA, if you've ever wanted to meet an eviler person in the world, meet somebody from the recording industry, right, fought that tooth and nail. Suddenly they started making gobs of money, and they love it. They love it so much they're trying to force jobs into charging tiered pricing, 99 cents for every song. But the ones that are really popular, they want you to pay $2 for, right? And luckily, so far, Jobs has said, no way. Do you have a question?
Isn't this kind of confusing the terms web and internet?
That's the point of the Web 2.0, and actually that's where I was getting to. It's like the idea of Web 2.0, by the way, the question was, isn't this kind of confusing the terms web and the internet? Right? When they created the term Web 2.0, right, they were referring to web as platform. Basically, what they're really saying is the internet as the platform. Right? It was not trying to say that a web page is the next thing. What they're trying to say, everything that was built so far is not anything that's coming. There's a whole new wave of applications, right? That's really what you're saying. That's why I said the sources from Tim O'Reilly. That's, he goes in describing what he really meant when he first created it. And he talks about this concept of platform, right? A good thing to point about this is that Craigslist is on here. Flock is a great browser. It's a first attempt to try and remake the browser, which hasn't changed since the first version of Netscape. In fact, if you take Firefox today and look at it next to Netscape 1, they're identical, right? Google Maps suggests, I think everyone's seen that one. Dig is a great example of Web 2.0. It's about the social environment, everyone interacting with each other, and Dig is a great example of that. So why is this important? Flat out, it means ubiquity, and ubiquity means freedom of choice. Right? When you get to the point where the Internet is the platform for something, and it's no longer whoever controls the native OS calls, suddenly you actually have a choice that you can use whatever freaking operating system you want, as long as you can make network calls. And a good example of that is IPTV. There's a whole new generation of cable-type TV boxes about to hit the market, and it's about TiVo hits the Internet. No longer are you going to be forced to buy a package of 50 channels that you only watch two channels of, but you can do it a la carte. Say, I just want to watch Friends. I just want to watch this show. Just download it whenever it's ready, and that's what you're going to get. If you've ever heard about the FCC chairman telling the cable companies they need to move to a la carte, that's the reason why he was making that suggestion, because they're about to get buried by the Internet, right? The same way that the news media has been buried by blogging, they're about to get buried again. What's really nice about this is when you get to the point where the OS doesn't matter, it's really nice because new devices start hitting the market. And a good example of that is, has anybody seen the Nokia 770? Right? Pretty cool device. And if you haven't seen or heard of it, right, it's the first Internet-based tablet. It's about the size of an iPad, but it's a full-blown Linux tablet PC, gives you all the functionality you need, and it was not designed like the, like Microsoft's trying to push the tablet PCs, where they want to charge you more than they do for a laptop, right, to get half the functionality. It was designed to be a second PC for the home, where mostly our wife and kids or whoever is using it, they're simply just checking email or browsing the web, right? These people were saying, look, $300 is all you really need. Here's a simple application to surf the web while you're sitting there watching TV. Really cool. That's an example of where the platform starts becoming ubiquitous and the freedom to choose. Is a TiVo running Windows? No, it's running Linux. Are these next devices I was talking about running IPTV running Windows? No, they're running Linux. Right? Linux is becoming a default platform. And a reason, example of that, why is that Nokia 770 $300 and the Windows new device they just announced today called Origami $1,000? The license. Right? When you make the OS a commodity, all the complement stuff becomes more in demand. And it basically enables us as users to be able to do more, be more free. Is there a question over there, by the way? Oh, okay. Yep. If you guys have questions, just go ahead and jump in anytime you want. I want to make this more interactive. In fact, at the end of this, I was planning to do some demos and we can watch some Ajax calls. So it's funny you should bring that up. Actually, I have a thing about ActiveX in a minute. And how many people do you actually think use ActiveX?
I know that
Firefox definitely doesn't support it. Why? Because it's proprietary. And I agree there's too many, but there's not that many, if you think about it from the greater aspect. It's a huge security hazard, and that's why most people don't use it to program to, because it's a nasty, nasty thing. I can tell you from a person who does web development, as well as I pay people to do web development, IE is the biggest pain in the ass there is, right? It is nasty, right? I am sorry, but it is flat-out nasty, right? I can build something, and anybody in this room can build something to standards, and it will work in Safari, Firefox, Netscape, Opera, that Nokia 770, and any other browser you can imagine. Load it in IE, and it'll look horrible. Why? Because IE does things just any way it wants, right? Here's another thing you probably don't know, right? All these things you hear about IE being the predominant browser out there, well, there's a little bit of a bug that they don't really claim as a bug. If you take CSS and embed an image as a background into a web page, then use IE to go to it, and I put that background five times on my website, right? There's a little thing called a caching bug in IE, although they're not going to fix it, and they publicly said that on their website. Basically, Firefox is going to go grab that image, check its cache, and reload that image five times. IE is going to go back to the server five times. Why do you think they want to do that? Because when they do the browser counts, they go on browser hits. because the browser identifies itself every time it hits the server. So if I'm looking at my server and I go once and grab a web page from Firefox, it looks like I hit it once. If I hit that same page from IE, it looks like I hit that page five times with IE. Right? Again, IE is evil. It is evil. All right, that being said, ActiveX. ActiveX is going away. All right. In fact, next slide after that one. All right, ActiveX is going away. I'll get into that in a second. Oh, I'm sorry.
When you talk about IE five times, is that a metaphoric five or is it absolute exact five?
Well, what I meant five is what I said is that if I take, do you understand what I meant by CSS?
Yeah.
Cascading style sheets?
Does it change from one application to another?
No, IE.
Five times this time and five times
no,
that time.
Well, sorry. What I meant was is that Internet Explorer, right, if I put the same image in Internet Explorer five times or six times or seven times, however many times I put it in that browser and reference it,
the number of times
it's referenced inside the page. Oh. Yeah, and it's a CSS bug. Let me clarify that too, right, which is another thing they don't do very well either, which is why everything breaks in IE. But the thing I want to mention here is that when you get to this point where you get to the platform is the web and it's not the platform is a OS, right? Suddenly you get applications that become network-based, and it doesn't matter what device you're accessing it on. It looks the same, and the data is the same because the data is put somewhere central, right? A good example of this, Google Maps, right? I can look at Google Maps on my Mac. I can take one of these IBM laptops running Linux or one of these IBM laptops running Windows. Google Maps is Google Maps is Google Maps, right? And when, and this is coming, we start having displays, computer displays inside our cars, and you start having a faster wideband CDMA, you're driving down a road and you want to use Google Local to find out where the local closest Pizza Hut is to you because you're going to have GPS embedded as well, right? You'll be able to do that. Here's another thing for a geek. I'm an old Army land nav guy. All right, take lat long coordinates and put them into Google, and it'll pinpoint exactly where you're at. All right. So it's already there. It's waiting to be waiting to be done. All right, so let's get to AJAX. One thing I always really bothers me when I'm talking to people is that Web 2.0 is not AJAX. It has nothing to do with each other, right, per se. But they do help each other out. Or one helps the other. Web 2.0 is a concept. It was really confusing. It made people think there's a whole new version of the Internet out there. Where do I go buy it, right? Oh, God, help me. AJAX is really just another acronym for stuff we've been doing for years. In fact, all AJAX is a JavaScript method to be fundamental when you boil it down, right? But a Web 2.0 app with AJAX enabled enables you to do some really, really incredible things, right? And a good example of that is grabbing a Google map and dragging it across the page and panning from one end of the coast to the other without ever refreshing the whole page. And that's what the whole concept of AJAX is about. Why do I have to reload the entire page just for a new request? All I'm asking for is 1K of information, and yet you're sending me 95K of exactly the same data I just requested five times before. So AJAX is about sending just the incremental data that's different. And I'll get into a more detailed diagram flow for the geeks in the audience. Okay, we're going to dive down deep as we go. All right. And the point is that AJAX makes a richer experience. And that's what I was, that comment that Tim was talking about when he said a richer user experience. It's about making desktop apps and web apps look the same. And actually, it's more about making web apps better than desktop apps. Right? And it's already starting to happen. And there's a lot of applications that are getting ready to boil to the top of the web that's going to be really, really cool. And a good example is those IPTV devices where you're browsing what you think is a TiVo, and it's actually a web page that this thing's pushing out, and it's interactively grabbing what's available from the Internet using AJAX. Right? A good one is evoketv.com. It's a first example of that. You can use AJAX and to dynamically see what the hell's going to be on tonight and see what when it's on and when it's also going to be on. A good example, too, of how these things mash up together is TiVo making a partnership with Yahoo. Right? It'll get to the point where you can tell Yahoo to tell your TiVo to record a show at 2 o'clock in the morning because you're not going to be awake. Right? So, again, it's more AJAX is about making the app, making the web more like an application than it is like a web page. It's no longer about having brochure websites, but actually having interactive web pages and web applications. Right? So what is AJAX? AJAX is nothing more than an acronym for synchronous JavaScript and XML. Here's the kicker. You don't need XML. Right?
JSON.
Exactly. JSON is a good example. JavaScript notation for those that didn't hear that. Another example is Google Maps. Google Maps does not use XML. It grabs images, right? What they do is they use two iframes basically together, embedding the image in an iframe and grabbing AJAX calls. And I'll show you that live here in a second. Right? And here's what I was talking about when you mentioned something about ActiveX. In any other browser but IE, it's a native JavaScript object. JavaScript is a very nice object-oriented program language. No matter what you heard about dancing dogs and whatever else people used JavaScript for in the past. Right? In IE, it's an ActiveX object. Here's the kicker. Where do you think AJAX really came from? Microsoft. Microsoft originally created a concept of AJAX for their Outlook web access for Exchange. Right? What's even more ironic is that the concept of AJAX was actually written about many, many months, probably about a year and a half before it, by Apple. It's always been called remote scripting. Right? As we're in the past, it's kind of like what we do in NetDirectory, where we use iframes embedded in pages so that it actually interacts with you a lot more cleaner. But the problem is that when it's an ActiveX object, you got huge security concerns, and it just causes a nightmare for web developers. When you get to the point that Firefox, Netscape, Opera, and all of them actually make it a native call, it's really nice because then you're not worried about security implications. It's really nice to manipulate as an object, and you can use it wherever you want, however you want. And anybody, no matter what their skill set, can easily use it. Right? It's not hard for you guys if you've never used web development language, to actually just grab some code off the web. There's plenty of it out there that's open source, and make your own dynamic web pages that can show your family albums on the fly using PHP and JavaScript on a web browser. Right? IE7, though, ActiveX is going away. Thank God it's dying, and it's dying a slow death. Right? But it's going away. And the XML HTTP request will become a native method just like every other browser. So I don't know how many people actually program or use JavaScript, but the two methods are generated shown here. In fact, on the Microsoft browsers, it's actually, depending on which browser you use, it's a different call, but that's basically what it is. For each browser version, there was a different ActiveX browser version, so you had to do signal factory checks to make a check and see which version am I running. This is a big nightmare where every other browser...
Does anybody really do that anymore?
I mean, generally when you write...
JavaScript library that handles that for
you. Well, yes and no. Depends what you're trying to do, right? When Google started, they were doing it long before they wrote their own, right? A lot of people wrote their own. We wrote our own, right? We use the library for the back end, but for the front end, we write our own, because there's certain things we want to do to manipulate. And when you get down to it, it depends what you want to do. And there's a lot of really cool libraries out there that are available. But in any other browser, no matter what the version is, it's just one simple method call to grab it, so you know that it's the same method no matter what version of browser or what type of browser you're using. All right, so why does this matter? Well, this is kind of showing what the web is like without AJAX. And basically, if you can think of what Web 1.0 was, I ask for a web page, I get a big fat chunk of information that comes down to me with the full web UI, images and all. Right? And say it's an address book that I'm looking up. I ask for John's address, you know what? I get the same full web UI pushed down to me with John's web address or home address. I click a button that says next address, and it's a simple 1K response. You know what? I'm going to get the same full web page thrown down at me, images and all, plus John's address. Why do I need a full web page every time? That's what AJAX is about. AJAX says, hey, give me address.com. That's a 1K information sent out to the server. You get 150K full web page down. That's light, very light for the web, if you haven't noticed. In fact, most web pages are getting close to like 400, 500K. You type in a search bar, give me John's address. It's a 1K response to the server, and the server throws you back, hey, just John's address. It's 1K of information. You click the next button, you're asking for the next address, it's 1K up, and you just get the next address. It's 1K, and all you're getting is his address. You're not getting the full web page all over again. Right? It just doesn't make sense why I should have to sit there and look at the same page load in my browser every time over and over again. And that's what AJAX is supposed to meant to solve. All right, so why? How easy is this to read? Okay, let me try. How about the image? Can you make that out? Okay. Let me describe the image. And then you can look at the PDF later. Right, basically, what we're trying to say is a classic web application and the AJAX web application. I took this image from the Adaptive Path website, and that's where this guy named Jesse James Garrett first wrote this article where he coined the term AJAX. Right, it's like coining the term DHTML. Has anybody obviously heard of DHTML? Anybody want to take a guess what DHTML is? What is it, really? It's nothing more than HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. It's just one term to say all this stuff mashed together. Right? So really, AJAX is a component of the HTML. It's just another acronym for stuff we've always used and just a really annoying thing to have to deal with. Right. So basically what we're trying to say is that in the classic web application, you had a web server, which is being shown at the bottom, and a browser client, and the server might have had a database backend. And you just basically one browser talked to over and over again as you clicked. It was a native HTML call. Right. In the new model, basically what we do is we create this AJAX engine. That's what he's calling it. That sits on the browser client to create a more richer client that communicates directly to the web server, which is being shown on the bottom block. And the web server doesn't really change, except now, instead of taking native HTML answers, it's actually answering XML calls or basic data calls. It doesn't matter. It doesn't just answer HTML requests. So it can do both. All that AJAX engine is what you see here on the left. This is a very simplified look at saying, how do I curate the AJAX object. And this is an example of how I deal with multiple browsers. In the top part, I say, if the window can support HTML requests, that means every browser on the planet but IE, right? Start doing this. Basically, give me the right state, generate the object, get ready to open a request to the server. Then it says, else, if you're an active ECT object, oh, God, you're IE, right? Which type of IE? And what they're not saying, you're showing here is we would actually have requests showing MSL, XML 2, 3, 4, 5, depending on the IE browser type, and we'd have to try and catch which one that is, right? So that's essentially what we have to do. At that point, then, you can then call that function from anywhere within your application to send a request back to the server and bring it back. Hardest thing about AJAX is not creating the object. It's dealing with the response text, and what do I do with it, right? So what are more examples? I gave you one, housingmaps.com, right? Anyone here heard of Rightly? They just got bought out. I just found out about like an hour ago. They just got bought out. Google bought them. Yeah. Google bought Rightly. Right? Google bought Rightly. 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 W-R-I-T-E-L-Y. That's what's being shown down here. Imagine Verb from a web application. Full word access. But what's really cool about it is that everyone in this room could be working on the same document via a web page, and we can see who's editing it. And as you're editing it, we can see the changes being displayed on our screen. Yeah. Hey, you know what? It's better if you've ever worked in a large organization where you have to use those Word, you know, track changes and read through all the purple and green and yellow labels. Oh, my God, that's a nightmare. Right? At least now you can watch what, you know, each dumbass is doing as they do it. But it's pretty cool. What's nice about Tune is they can export, you know, right from there there's a file button. Actually, I'm going to prove it. I have a white Rightly running right here on my browser, and we'll do a demo. They can actually save natively as Word, OpenOffice, or RTF HTML. It's a question?
Actually, OpenDocument is what enables Rightly to be able to do that. It's the fact that it's XML and it's easily manipulable by any same
document
part of XML.
Right. XML to the rescue. Too bad XML sucks. I use XML a lot. I just have to say that. XML is really processor intensive. But he's right. XML is really nice because now it gets us to open standards. Right, just be aware of the giant Microsoft trying to say they want to help us get to open standards. Right? It's really about them controlling that standard and pulling their IP rights out. Other things coming out is called Basecamp. Really cool project management. Allows people to collaborate as a team across the internet. Right? Why is that important? Well, because most companies, actually everybody's deployed all over the world having to solve the same problem. Right? So if you have this way of doing it, it's very nice to solve those problems. Another one up there is Net Directory. You see, that's our application. Feels like a desktop app, manage any number of servers across the internet, no matter where you're at, Linux, Solaris, FreeBSD. What's a nice thing up in the top left, Evoke TV, really cool web browser interface to see what's playing on TV tonight. You basically say, Evoke TV. Evoke TV. Yep, you just basically tell where you're at, what is your cable company, and it'll show you all the listings, and you can browse the listings, click on a certain listing, it'll show you the information for that. It's a really cool way of basically having an online TV guide, right? What would be nice is when they start connecting and allow open the open interface for them so you just start writing your Myth TV to.
Myth TV web already does that.
Right, but one browser that you don't have to worry about getting that one key from the one site that that provides you with the access to the TV listings, right? It's open. It's say, share the mesh. That's what it means. The whole Web 2.0 is about open the data. It's all about the data inside. Next question.
Is
probably talk to one of the most opinionated people about that. Why not extend Flash? Well, Flash is proprietary. You're locked into one vendor. There is a company that actually tried to do that, and it's Yahoo Maps. They actually have a beta out right now that's a competitor of Google Maps that uses Flash for the mapping software. Here's a problem, right? You got to wait for a freaking Flash applet to load, and depending on what you're doing, it could take anywhere from 20 seconds to a minute and, or 2 minutes, depending on what it is, and your browser connection. One of the reasons why a lot of people don't do it is web developers, most developers, anybody really, they like to use open standards of development, right? It's a lot easier to get documentation for, it's a lot easier to get something up and running quickly, and then it's a lot easier to optimize it to, you know, basically run better later on. Right? With Flash, you really have to be a designer. Have you ever written a Flash app? Oh my God, that thing's a nightmare. You have to have a movie background, really, to write to it. It talks about these time frames and movie scripts and things. It's just not what a programmer really thinks about. Java is another good one. Java, what really is good on is the server itself. And that's where you're seeing a lot of Java take off, right? So in my opinion, I share this with a lot of people, and other people are going to disagree with me, but hey, you're hearing it from one man. PHP is great for getting something running quick and dirty, and depending on scalability, right? Ruby on Rails, really interesting thing that's starting to come out. Great technology, right? J2EE, enterprise class, lots of libraries, and we know it scales to exceptional levels. Good example of that is eBay, right? Bit slow sometimes, but you have to know what you're doing to tweak it to get it to go at the speed you want, right? But Java running on a browser, that's worse than Flash running on a browser, right? It is very, very slow. Anybody who's run a Java applet has probably screamed hatred at it before. Yes. That's a good point. Basically, he's saying is if you use Flash or Java to build your website, you basically block yourself from any of the search engines being able to rank you because they can't see the text of the data. All they see is an applet, and it's a binary, and that's all they can get at. They can't see the text that's embedded into the browser itself. Unless you get really hokey with a bunch of meta tags, and that's just a nightmare to manage. Yeah. All right, so Ajax in action, let's talk about actually developing it. So what I did is I took a screenshot of one of my development screens and where I was actually tracing some of my own Ajax calls. There's what's really great about using open standards, there's a lot of open development tools. Right? All the tools right now, well, there's a few coming out of proprietary, but almost all of them that developers use to track and trace these things are all open. It's fantastic about it. When developers help developers develop better, right? Google's a good example of that. They contributed back a lot of things to help other web developers create these applications. One of the things, has anybody used the GreaseMonkey script in Firefox? Right? Really cool thing. Allows you to embed JavaScript into any web application you want. So basically, GreaseMonkey is extended using a script that allows you to just capture the Ajax calls right in the browser itself with the draggable div tag. And you can capture that as it's going. So it's really nice to debug what's going on, what the server's really sending you. Right? So one of the things I've actually thought is let's watch Google Maps. Let's see what happens. Right? So as far as the tools themselves, right, you got another great tool, Firefox Web Developer Tools. Right? Great tool. Someone else has had the pleasure of using that. In fact, you can see it on the top of my screen here. Actually, I didn't catch that before. What it allows you to do is basically capture everything you need about the web interface you're looking at, no matter what it is. You can also go around what people try to do to block you from seeing their JavaScript, which is rather funny. They don't understand about caching. There's also, which someone up here talked about, there's a lot of open source libraries that are available that are under GPL and MPL code, under license, excuse me. DWR for the Java guys allows you to take native Java classes on your J2E server and open it up to XML calls from Ajax. Really cool. Scriptaculous is a very nice way to get all those really cool JavaScript things that, on your desktop, like sliding menus and things. OpenRico, Prototype, there's plenty of others. Just do a quick Google search and you'll just be inundated with your choices. There's too many, yes, far too many. So on to the demos. Yeah, you gotta like Mac, huh? Sliding distance. All right, so Writely. Those of you who wonder what Writely was, let me jump down and get out of the way. This is my way of doing Word on the internet. I don't know if this is Google trying to tell me how they bought them. Yeah. Yeah, I think Google bought them and locked everybody out. Ah, there we go. All right. So let's say I want to create a new document. Let's call it Trilug. Is anybody going to collaborate with me? So I say yes, and I put their email addresses. I'm going to say no. Say create the document. Open a new window, and here I have a Word document. Say, log is cool. And I can do anything to it like I would do in Word to make this a header. And down here at the bottom, you'll see there's a little tag right here in the bottom left. It basically tells me who's editing the document at the same time I am. Right? I like these. Yeah, you got a good point there. Word is probably about what you're saying, but it's a good way for most everybody. If I say Word, it's a sad state when you have to say you can say Word and everybody understands what you're talking about. Right? But unfortunately, it's that way. I could say OpenOffice document. Does that help? Might, better. Okay. Brighter. You're right. All right, let's move on to Google. Google Maps. I think everyone's seen this one where I come down to it and I can browse and basically drag my way around the world. Right? That's all Ajax calls there. Want to see what they are? Here's a Grease Monkey script.
Up here on the top. Come on. Let's move it over to where it's important. Say I want to drag down here, and I want to zoom in. There's my Ajax call right there. What did it say? It's really cool. You'll notice this. I can actually export this and see the full output of the header. Okay, so here's my HTML HTTP header. Here's actually the content of the request. Is that XML? No. What that is Latin land. Basically, longitude, latitude coordinates telling the NavTex server, give me these images that are a range of about 100 miles around these this coordinate point. Right? Nice Ajax in action. Right? Really small data, really tiny, going back and forth. Right? Another example, the NetDirectory login. Show you my little tool. Okay, which one of these is grabbing? Not the one behind. And you can see the Ajax call right there. Why is this thing doing? So as I select services, here's the Ajax call. And notice we embed actual HTML directly into the Ajax call. What it allows us to do is dynamically change the page on the fly as you go. So as I select, say, service here, I get Ajax information, and I can simply start manipulating stuff. That's telling my locals isn't working. So like I said, I can capture the information as we go. It's a really, really nice way of troubleshooting it. And what's really nice about this, it's free. Right? It's developers helping developers be better developers. By the way, those of you who didn't get to see housing maps, here's a good example of a mashup in action. I want to move to Raleigh. I want to find a house for sale. There's Craigslist on the right. Google Maps show me all those locations on the map itself. I click on it, see who's selling a house here in Cary. Hey, here's a 205,000 townhome. Click the link, and it takes me right to the Craigslist for it. Bit flowery. But good example of it in action. I mean, that's an example of the data. It's all about the data, and it's all about the users and trusting users and mashups. And so that's essentially what I was going to talk about tonight. Is there any questions? No questions. Wow. Oh, come on.
Accessibility. I know that when things update dynamically, it sends parameters back to the top of the page first, reading all over again. Is this going to be a problem with
data? It's not only a problem. There's another problem. It's the back button. The back button's broken. Right? You basically have to retrain ourselves to use the internet through a web browser again. Right, we're used to saying, like, oh, I want to go back to what this was, and we start hitting the back button, right? Well, there is no back button when you load the application once in the data layer. Right? There's a few workarounds, but what they really are hacks. Right? You basically got to start training yourself to deal with the Ajax application as an application, not as a web page. That's just a bunch of different web pages you're viewing in sequence. Right? The visually impaired, what a lot of people do, including us, what we do is we use very bright colors, lots of images next to colored text, right? So it's a lot of visual cues to the user. It's amazing what you start thinking about. Is this person colorblind?
can this person see easily? So you have to deal with those things in different ways. And a lot of times it's a combination of color and image. Right? Big X to big check mark, right, for example. Right. Any other questions? Any complaints? All right, that's all I had. Oh, Mark wants to give away something. Oh, saying if you can answer 5 questions I make up, you can get 5 free versions of NetDirector. Okay? I got to make up questions on the fly. Can someone tell me a problem with Ajax and Web 2.0? Back button broken. Do you have a different one? Oh, that's the one you're going to use.
You can't easily bookmark links to a state of
the... Yes and no, but I'll give it to you.
Like Google Maps there, there's a link, right?
Yes.
Generate a link that the
you're right.
It understands.
You're right. There's another one called delicious.org, yep. Bookmark sharing, using Ajax and all that stuff that kind of helps deal with that, but you got to be honest. It's a different way of looking at it.
There are the data, right? But
oh, you mean actually bookmarking the page.
Bookmarking your place.
Yes. You're right. He got to go on his own. He's got one. Oh, I got 3 more. Someone give me an example of a Web 2.0 app that I didn't mention.
Right. Builder Online.
Our Builder Online. Nice. Anybody else in the back? That's a good one, yeah. Very good one. All right, one more. What is one of the name a really good thing about using Ajax going forward?
Bandwidth.
Okay. That's who gets it. Platform independent. All right.
Used to say the network is
the computer. Do we have a thing for? Can everyone hear that? Is it on? I want to make sure I get the same inflection.
So exactly how is this different from what Sun used to say? And they used to say that the web is the internet is the computer.
It is very close, and amazingly, they got it right and didn't realize it. couldn't market. They don't know really what they want to do, you name it, right? You look at, you know, why do companies like IBM and Sun invest $1 billion in Linux? Can anybody guess? Is it altruism?
IBM got it back.
IBM got it back. How'd they get it back?
Selling
services. When you make the OS something that is incredibly cheap, right, like going to Best Buy to buy a TV for $100, it makes it a commodity. When the OS becomes a commodity, you're no longer at the stranglehold of Microsoft. You're not just starting with Microsoft. You can then use any platform you want. You sell more hardware, and guess what? You sell more services. Right? Sun tried doing the same thing, but they were just blindly angry at Microsoft and did whatever they could to just fight them. When they first got started, they were fantastic. I agree.
When the software was bundled with the hardware, they took the RIS technology that IBM developed but refused to market.
Well, let me guess where you come from. What's your backup? But I agree with you. You're right. If it wasn't for Sun, a lot of the stuff we wouldn't be doing here.
I'm an aggressive end user. I used to do modeling with Sun, with estuary models.
So you've been using Sun for a long time then?
I was using Sun.
Solaris, I have no problem with Solaris. I think Solaris is a good operating system.
I like
right?
Sun OS. Solaris, to me, was a step backwards.
I'll leave that one alone. What's that, counter back? I can't hear what you're saying.
I just suggest that people look at GUI.com, GOOWY.com.
Oh, GUI.
GUI spelled wrong.
GOOEY?
WY.
Let's stop that as fast as I can. G-O-O-W-Y?
Yeah.
At least we went to something decent that time.
GUI.
Something
awful like boing boing.
GUI. You want to explain it?
I've only played with it, but it's basically a virtual desktop on the web page.
Virtual desktop, huh? That's pretty cool.
Once you log in, you put your feeds on the page, and you can do all things you might do on your PC.
Hey, let's take a look at the screenshots. A virtual desktop. Yeah, there you go. A little Mac bar at the bottom. And good one. You want to try it for free? A little free link down at the bottom. That's actually a good one, too, is an example that Tarantella has some stuff. You can share the desktops. So I think that's a good example of 2.0.
So that's why I haven't heard of it, right? Because it's Flash.
Because it's Flash? I don't know. Is it Flash? Is it really? Too bad. It won't take off.
Go ahead. Like a website, a central repository with links going to like online applications like this, or are they just kind of haphazard?
It's called Google.
Well, yeah.
There's no central repository. That's the great thing about the net is things pop up all the time. And the really cool thing about Ajax and web technologies, right? You don't need VCs to do it, right? Two guys sitting in a room who just want to hack away at Ruby on Rails can get a really cool web application running really quickly. Good example of a company like this called 37 Signals, right? They're the ones who created Basecamp, Tada Lists, and all the other web applications that are like that. It's basically a bunch of guys across the world, right? None of them really have met each other for the first 6 months of their working together, and they built these things from scratch, and they've got thousands and thousands of users. But the thing is, things like that pop up all over the place. That's a great thing about the web, right? I saw a hand up in the back.
Wouldn't you say that that there's a whole lot of overlap between what we had originally called the web and Web 2.0. I noticed on your Web 2.0 slide you listed that Wikipedia is considered a Web 2.0 app, and all a wiki is pretty much a openly editable type of forum. So couldn't you even argue that the earliest Perl versions of the web message boards or forums could be considered as a stretch of Web 2.0 app? I mean, it seems like some of this has been around for a while.
Some of it has been around for a while. And I won't disagree with you there. It's not my term. It's Tim O'Reilly's. But why is Wikipedia considered a Web 2.0 app? It's a big point. It's because it's accessible and it's a sociable application, right? It's like a blog. It's like a forum. It's people interacting with each other using this stuff. That's why Wikipedia is considered a Web 2.0 app, not because the technology uses Ajax. Although Ajax plugged into web forms have been proven to be really cool stuff. An example of that is Dig. As you're looking at a forum, you watch the forum post happen in front of you. You don't have to keep refreshing the page. Right? That's just an example of how Ajax can better enable your experience. Anybody else? Yeah. I hear a butt coming.
No.
Okay.
In addition to that, what I'd be interested in is how is your take on Ajax versus Python plus backend, where basically you're doing all the same things with objects, but instead of doing it from a web server with XML and JavaScript, you're basically controlling all of that stuff, because in both cases, all you're really doing is you're optimizing the bandwidth and the protocol by dealing with objects from a more evolved level as opposed to how things grew up with them.
The concept of Ajax, I agree with what you're saying there. I don't disagree with that. In fact, I think they're two orthogonal things that we were talking about. Oh, God, don't ask me to repeat that. Where's the mic? Can you repeat all that at once?
All right. Ajax and Web 2.0 is like Python and a database backend where you just squeeze it all down and you do it customized. And they're kind of two evolving, competing areas where, if you take a look at something like the Track server that a lot of people are using for Wiki and developers are using for Wiki and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, all it is it's a Python script that talks to an SQLite database, and it's all there in one little package.
Think how cool a Track could be if it had Ajax embedded, where as a developer, I can see the change sets automatically appear on a website without hitting refresh.
It's already, they've already got in
I know. It's Exactly. There are a lot of things you can do to better enable the user interface. And I agree with that. I use Track. We use Track. We love Track. Track's really cool. But can Track be better? Yes. Can any software application be better? Yes. But when you think about it, as far as I'm referring to orthogonal issues, right, what you're talking about there is a really nice way of reducing the bandwidth required for the application. But there are other ways to make the user experience itself better, right, from the UI perspective, right? And this is where a lot of times where I think developers forget the fact that they're building an application not for a developer but for an actual end user, right? It's not always about limiting the bandwidth in the background. It's also about making their interface, their experience, intuitive, nice, something they want to repeat, right? Ever see an application that you can tell was built by a developer and didn't have a UI designer involved, right? As I've had the pain of going through it. I'm sure everyone in this room has had to go through that pain. That's kind of where I look at that. If it's done right, it's fine. It solves the problem. That's the reason why I said earlier where Web 2.0 does not mean AJAX. But AJAX surely does make the experience a lot better, right? And if you could use the two together, where you use compression in the back end and AJAX in the front end, you get even better. Turbo gears. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff you can do, and that's really cool about the environment is that you can pick and choose what you want. And there's a lot of tools that pop up by the open source community, right? In the end, we're only helping ourselves get more of an open platform, right? And we're no longer stuck on the Windows, right, having to deal with that in our back end or in our front end. Did that basically answer your question?
Sure. I mean, I'm...
A good example, too, by the way. AJAX is nothing new. It's something we've been doing for years. XMRPC, it's all it really is a reuse of XMRPC, right? But this is a way of having the JavaScript and the browser client make XMRPC calls or make native RPC calls, really, right, back to the server. And the server could be anything. An example of that Internet TV set-top box, right? It might have a web page. Maybe it doesn't, right? But the media, the actual video, is not going to be coming from a web server. It's mostly going to be coming streaming from another type of server. Right? So whatever the call is, doesn't matter. It's more about using the web for what it's really good at, and that's shared data and media and communications.
Right. Question. What's Turbo Gears?
That's something I dare talk about. I'm not as familiar with it. Never mentioned it.
Turbo Gears is a Ruby on Rails type framework for Python. It has Cherry Pie as the web handler code. It has MochaKit as the JavaScript. well, wait till they're replacing Cherry Pie with Rhubarb Tart. and a host of other Python goodies all wrapped up together and installable via. It's amazingly quick to get applications running. You can build a wiki in 20 minutes. It's fascinating.
The nice thing about Ruby on Rails, too, is I was mucking around with it last weekend. I was telling somebody, Ruby on Rails, all those languages are really cool ways for a developer to get a web application up and running really quickly. Python approach, whatever your language is, basically, do what's comfortable to you. Right? That's all that really matters. And stuff is starting to evolve to the point where you don't need to be a really in-depth web developer to get something up and running quick.
Let's use the Java. What roadblocks do you see?
It's not on.
Are we not on?
No.
All right, Deepo, you read together. What proprietary roadblocks do you see in the way being thrown up by the likes of Microsoft and others?
So the question was, what roadblocks is going to be thrown up in the way of what, though?
What is Microsoft going to do to combat this very open source friendly, platform independent? Because that's obviously what Microsoft fears.
Well, here's the thing.
It's going to make their browser suck.
Yeah. A lot of times what they say is that, yeah. I kind of look at this as like, who knows what Microsoft's going to do, but you always know it's going to be evil, right? And in the reality of it, is Microsoft evil? No. They got some really brilliant people working there from a computer science point of view, right? Very smart people. Problem is they're very collapsed and internal. They don't talk to other people to get many eyes looking at it. So what would Microsoft do? Who knows? Oftentimes, what really scares me is the fact that they filed nearly 100 patents a day for the last 3 years. They've been filing patents over and over and over again on some crazy stuff. I think I heard at one Red Hat meeting down in Louisiana that they actually tried to file a patent for the smiley face in IM, right? So what would they do? My guess is they try and throw IP at it. Because remember Bill Gates' book, The Road Ahead? He said, I envision this thing. In reality, like, since it's all in the open market, there's not much they can do, and they're really already behind the curve. Right? The fact that they didn't really throw any developers at IE for years until suddenly Firefox started eating them, house and home away from their user base. Suddenly, there's more than one developer working on IE. Right? What's interesting is these developers working on actually have blogs, and they're speaking their mind, and they're bitching about it. Right? And suddenly, now you got more than a team of people working on IE that are taking ActiveX out because everyone said ActiveX sucked. But no one really cared at Microsoft because no one was working on it. Right? So most likely what they'll do is they're probably going to get in a race with Google to buy up as many startups, internet startups as they can and see who comes out on top in the end. But the cool thing is that there's really not much they can do because anybody in their garage or in their house at night can build these applications very quickly and do whatever it is. And a lot of stuff, since it's all become service-oriented, it can be anything you can imagine, mostly stuff you haven't imagined yet. Right? Like Basecamp, whoever thought that? Right? Is there a question back? Ajax is not an application. Ajax is not an object. Ajax is just some fancy marketing term that somebody decided to throw at a native JavaScript object. JavaScript objects that have been there since, well, forever, since the JavaScript was first live script before they OEM'd the name Java from Sun.
If I touch JavaScript, I touch Ajax by simply.
Yeah, that's the thing why I don't like these acronyms, right, DHTML and Ajax, because it really confuses the content here, right? What makes you do a rollover in a browser? The JavaScript method, right? That same programming language is what's doing the remote calls back to the server to grab your information. It's the same language. And what's nice about the fact that it's JavaScript and not ActiveX, it can't do anything outside that web window. ActiveX can. ActiveX can go right into your operating system, into your file system, and that's where it's a security hole. JavaScript, by its very nature and where everybody, including Microsoft, thank God, limits it into the browser itself, and it can't go outside. Does that make you feel better about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to pretend I don't need that. We've got it recorded.
Is there a question in the back?
Anyway, Paul, half a dozen things, but we'll pick the last one. You said Microsoft is filing hundreds of patents a day. Well, hundreds a week anyway.
Whatever, but it's a lot.
Right. And this isn't something I'm doubting at all. The question is, And the shall we say the word on the street,
yes,
is that the patent office is allowing these despite prior art.
I'll wait to see how long that lasts. The woman who runs the patent office is getting a lot of flack, and Luckloft and the web that's doing it, most of this BlackBerry stuff that's going on, right? And I don't know, if you read the other words on the street and the blogs and stuff, she won't be in her job much longer, right? Well, hopefully not somebody worse, or somebody at least who takes a look at it. And I think, to me, the worst thing is copyright law, right? It's a whole big problem. Patent law is not bad. Patent law is good until it's abused, right? When it's abused, it becomes a very bad thing. Copyright is exactly the same. Right? The Sonny Bono Act is a very good example of that. That's one of the nastiest things I've ever seen. Good way to keep Mickey Mouse owned by one company. Right? Another way of calling the Mickey Mouse Law. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Why I rant? Okay. Right. The Mortimer. Yeah. Unfortunately, everyone knows about Disney, and they're the ones that have the money. They're the ones who own the legislation. Right? In fact, one thing I can, if I get on a soapbox, is tell everyone to go listen to Larry Lessig's presentation. Right, about your erosion of freedoms based from big companies spoon-feeding our politicians the legislation that's going to control what we do, to the point where you're buying a CD from Best Buy and they charge you to put it onto your computer and they charge you again to put it onto your iPod. Right? And to take it off. Now we digress. Now we're really digressing. Anything back on there? Any other questions? Nope. Thank you for your time.